Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be watching, however you may be watching. Thank you so much. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. Ooh, I'm coming in hot. I'm going to calm that down a little bit. And apologies ahead of time because Bob Mackowitz is feeling a little under the weather. Hey, Bob.
Hey, gang. It's exactly how I feel. It's a little under the weather.
Yeah.
I was kind of sick yesterday, and then we called off the pod for that and a number of other reasons, but it just seemed like insanity to go out coughing. You don't want to be that guy on the 504 streetcar coughing his brains out when it's minus 15 out.
Here's the thing. It wouldn't have mattered because there's always several others of those guys that you would have fit right in.
That's probably true. I would have just been one of the crowd. I don't know. I guess. Hey, before we move any further, I want to do a quick shout out.
Because
we've got a lot to get to. The Leafs be sucking.
Yes.
The Jays are going to get CC Sabathia. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. .. I've got a fun Is It Wrong? Top 5 is going to be Star Wars themed.
Yep.
Because we didn't get to it last time, so our big argument.
I think, I think 2 weeks in a row, we actually didn't get to it.
That's probably true. It's at least... But I needed to do a shout out because I was driving down Dundas Street with my wife. We were on our way up to Maple.
Yep.
And right around Keelan Dundas, I saw the single greatest name for a store of all time.
Really? What was it?
It's just called, the sign out front says, Toronto's Best Italian Sausage. That's the name of the store.
Oh, there is a lot of pressure. Now I'm getting phlegmy. There's a lot of pressure for any male store owner in there. Like, if you're a male in there, like, there's a little bit more. But I love it. Just unabashed ego. I mean, every third store has world's best coffee. Good for them.
But that was the name of the store, Matt.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to go to the Yellow Pages, which is a thing 20 years ago, used to be a book.
Google it, kids.
Toronto's Best Italian Sausage. What do we sell?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, you know what? You're right, Bob. Because for a second, I was thinking of it more as the...
double entendre?
No. Well, yeah, of course. But no, you're right, because I was thinking of that's usually the thing you see under the title.
This, like, was the name.
If that's the title, what's under it?
It's like if you went to a movie and the movie was called Awesome Action Movie.
Yeah. Then what's below it? Yeah. You know,
was below it.
What is Roper and Ebert or whatever, you know? That's great.
Thank you.
Toronto, that's the name of the store. I love that. I love the hubris.
MCause56 or at Bob Mackowitz if you want to hit us up on Twitter. If you know of any better names for stores.
Yeah.
But I think that's it. We should just call our podcast Best Podcast About Toronto Sports.
Yeah. Just change the name. You know, or even.
What's it about?
Yeah. There it is. It's right there.
Sums it up.
Yeah. That is good. One thing we have to get to, because I tweeted this out. I'm like, yep, podcast had to get moved today for a lot of legitimate reasons. Bob was, you know, Bob, you're feeling sick. You're fighting it. There's been some bad weather. Holiday stuff. Life comes around. But there was one thing in the middle of it all that I found kind of funny was that you had a cleaning lady coming over. So I was sort of right with my instinct in last week's episode. I'm like, is there a cleaning lady here? But then you said you couldn't handle having him or her in the home if no one was there. And I've never heard of that before.
Well, it was the first time this person was coming over. I've never met them before. And to me, it seems like the height of insanity to just say to a complete stranger, hey, why don't you come on over? I'll leave and come back in 3 hours to somebody you've never met before.
Yeah, well, as someone who used to do shared Airbnb, I did that all the time.
I was thinking about that, too, because you were laughing at me, and I assumed you were going to shame me today.
It's not shaming. It's just bringing it up. It's an exploration.
But didn't you ever feel weird that somebody you didn't know was in your home?
The weird thing was no. And I think you are more of the majority, and I'm more of the outlier. As for the cleaning lady, cleaning person, I don't know what you can use anymore. It makes sense, but I never worried about it because I figured, well, we got a resume on them. And so, you know, they're going to leave a trail. It's going to be harder for them to get away scot-free. And in 2017, beyond art, what are the really expensive things? Because everything is mass-produced. Like the TV I have, which I've had for over 10 years, the equivalent of that maybe 30 years ago would have been really expensive. But because of mass production, everyone has like a $400 TV.
I more think about just, it's not even so much the money as it is the ripoff factor. Maybe as a guy who's had at least a dozen bikes stolen over the course of my life,
yeah,
I'm a little suspicious when it comes to humanity.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I got to believe any given week we're going to turn on W5 and there's going to be an expose of the cleaning industry,
yeah,
and how we all get ripped off blind when we're not looking.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Maybe it's already happened. Mm-hmm. The woman was a love. She was great.
Yeah.
She was fantastic. We had a nice chat. She was really, really nice and cleaned our house so well. I could not find my keys this morning. I could not find my laptop bag this morning.
That's
and
funny.
I thought, well, that's got to be the height of bourgeois entitlement when you say, you know, I can't find my keys because somebody who came to clean our house put them in a place that was probably really sensible.
Ooh, that is pretty high.
Yeah, so I didn't do it.
Maybe
I didn't do it.
Maybe somewhere down the road, top five bourgeois, you know, moments.
I feel like that one could be yours.
Yeah, I feel I could really, really dig into that.
I don't believe in cleaning people coming over to your house, though. I'm just not a big fan of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who make a living coming over here, and perhaps, like, you know, when you come to this country and it's hard to transfer education and skills and there's all kinds of hoops you have to go through.
Yeah.
I get it. It's an industry that employs a lot of people that, you know, need jobs.
Yeah.
And they might not be able to get jobs in other places. But I feel like, shouldn't we clean our house?
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny. Okay, now we're going to go down this for a couple more minutes. You brought it up. I've never had one.
Never?
Well, no, because I've lived alone, and I'm a fairly clean person. I get it more when, especially if there are two parents that are working and you got kid or kids, sometimes the house is chaos. And in that case, I fully get the idea.
Well, this is also something we do once or twice a year. Like,
see,
this is not.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because it's the holiday season. We're going to be having people coming over,
yeah,
and it's been very hard, so. In that sense,
it totally
actually
makes sense.
It does make sense.
What you are paying for is time. It's the same thing as being It's the same thing as being on the 407. Why do you go on the 407?
That's a good analogy,
why do I get
actually
seduced? Because I can get somewhere 20 minutes quicker. And I get the parent who every couple weeks, they get the cleaning lady because they want their house to be less chaotic and just so that the home feels more calm, more relaxed, because a messy house, that sort of chaos can permeate into the brain. So
I
get it.
This is all reasonable, and I feel a lot better about the decision. I always feel bad about it. It's weird because, like,
why would you stay in the home? If I felt bad, I would flee from the home in shame and come back 2 minutes after they leave. But you were around the person cleaning the whole time. See, I'd have to leave the house.
Right, so I didn't have to sit there and
Lord it over them. Right. I'm the king of the castle. Yes, clean my home as I eat my mutton.
Like Borat from the Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
Look at me. I have a chair.
Yeah, king of the castle.
Right. It was an ambivalent thing, but in the end, it turned out great. And
yeah,
the home looks great. I did find my keys. Mm-hmm. Nobody was hurt in the making of this story.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go.
100%.
And you went and saw Star Wars. Should we get to that a little later?
We'll get to
it
later. And I'm not going to give any spoilers. I'm not going to give any emotional resonance on my face. I'm not going to tip it at all. You know, because, yeah, I saw it last night at 10:45. So it was a late night for me.
Do you have any takeaways that you want to get to?
Of course. Of course.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay. Look, you want to start with the Leafs? Oh, you know what? I'm going to start with something a little
Because you went and saw the movie, I'm assuming that you probably just zipped through and saw the goals and maybe you got like the highlight pack of the game?
No, worse. I got to the movie theater just because of time and stuff really early. I had time to kill. There's a bar across the street. I watched the second period from a bar, just having a Guinness. And even that second period, my favorite thing about it, because there's no volume. And every couple seconds, they would show a shot in the crowd of really sad-looking Leaf fans. And I remember just going, yep, your facial expression perfectly says what that game was.
It is just, that had to be the worst game of the year. Not just in terms of the outcome, 2-0,
mm-hmm,
to the Minnesota Wild, but the lack of entertainment.
Yeah.
It's not just that Austin Matthews is out. They have become an incredibly boring team to watch.
Yep.
And so I felt really like we were a little ahead of the curve with the, is it okay to complain about your team when they're winning?
Yeah.
Because now that they're going to, you know, they lose to Philly, they lose to Minnesota.
Oh, now we can.
You know what's now right? You can complain openly. Open the floodgates.
Didn't you feel it? You know, like in Wizard of Oz, when the wind turns. Oh, no, sorry, Mary Poppins. When the wind turns and suddenly Mary Poppins arrives, it's just like, wait, now you can do it.
The weather vane is suddenly pointing north and a cold wind is going to blow.
Yeah.
Dial up the new pariah, Maddie. Yep. Leo Komarov, come on down. You are the new cause of everyone's angst when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Hold on a second. Before Komarov, Nylander. Komarov has one more shot per game, and shout out to Jonas Siegel in The Athletic. Since the start of November, Komarov has 33 shots, Nylander has 32. What is with that?
Well, that's also ice time, because the reason why I say Komarov is the new angsty pariah
of his
is
ice
because
time.
He's getting 19 minutes a game.
Oh.
And when you think back, last year it was Matt Martin.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about Matt Martin? And intermittently, there was a bit of Freddie Anderson in there, but it never got real bad. But now it feels like Leo Komarov, Corporal Komarov, who has been so loved in these parts for so long.
Yeah.
Come on down. You once had to create a Tyler Bozak safe zone.
I did.
On our old radio show, just so that the poor guy could have somewhere to go where he didn't have metaphorical eggs pelting
him. Everyone just crapping on him, even when he deserved
it. So I feel like maybe we need a Komarov safe zone right now, because it's coming, Maddie.
No. Do you know why? Because I felt bad for Bozak, because that was when the team was crap. This is a beautiful, magical team filled with young talent. And then Komarov feels like he's screwing it up. And Nylander feels like he's screwing it up. And once again, Bob, I always have my hobby horse. Mm-hmm. And my hobby horse for this entire...
usually more than one, Matt. Yeah, we'll go with...
Fair point.
A hobby horse here.
Quote from Mitch Marner. Teams are taking away the middle of the ice a lot more on us. They're playing more conservative and not giving us chances. I think that's just the thing we've got to battle through. Once again, smart coaching.
So funny you say that, because that was exactly the quote that I keyed on from my own takeaway.
Okay, and listen, I get it. And Babcock, you got to help fix this. And the players, you got to battle through this. And maybe there needs to be line combinations. And I get all that. On another level, bleep you, NHL. Bleep you, Minnesota, and Babcock, and Boucher, and everyone else playing conservative. Clog up the middle. Clog up the middle. It's an entertaining game. You got talented players, the fourth line players. If you took the athleticism of a fourth line player in 2017 and you plunked them into 1987, you'd be like, ooh, look at all the Mark Messiers on the ice. I hate it. Hate it.
Great rant, and I'm 100% behind you, and I'm so glad that you keyed on exactly the same thing. We just got to battle through it.
Yeah.
Who battles through it, Matt?
Yeah.
Who battles through it? In this great sort of game of, well, you know, they're just trying to congest the middle and make our skill players have to work harder.
Yeah.
That always wins.
Yeah.
That always wins. And you know why? Because hockey's broken. It's broken, gang. Guess what? If you want it to be an entertaining game, it's not. It is intermittently.
Yes.
Of course it is. You can get a game that's interesting, but... stop deceiving yourselves. The NHL has an entertainment problem. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this young, exciting, dynamo, whirlwind of a team filled with skill players is cranking out 2-0 losses, and they've scored, what, 6 goals in the last 9 games?
Yeah, over the last 6 games, yes, 9 goals. So, thanks again, Jonas Siegel.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The Leafs can't crack it. Certainly not without Auston Matthews in the lineup. And isn't it incredible how much one player makes a difference to a whole team? You saw this with Edmonton and McDavid, too.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talked about how smart the coaching was, how brilliant Chiarelli was. You got Connor McDavid.
Yes.
It changes everything. But these are boring games.
Yep.
And you and I have discussed, you'd rather lose a few games here and there if you're going to win 6-5.
Yeah.
Over the course of a season.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, to people that are not Leaf fans listening... is this sour grapes? Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's absolutely...
I have 0% sour grapes. I expect them to lose some nights.
I'm sure I have some sour grapes on this, but it goes to the idea that it's supposed to be an entertaining product. And I just hate, and this is in all sports, I hate cowardly coaches that just try to figure to control things by clogging up talent.
Dump and chase in hockey is the hockey equivalent of 3 yards in a cloud of dust in football.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much heroism to it.
Yeah.
It probably works over the course of 82 games. Although I don't know if it necessarily works. Look, now we can sort of get past, you know, I always feel like I'm ripping on the NHL. Maybe just because I'm Canadian. But now you look at Babcock, and this is what I find interesting. You know what I saw for the first time yesterday?
What?
For the first time, and I've been waiting for it. The Babcock and Carlisle comparisons.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Oh, no.
The holding back the skilled players and not allowing them to play a fun style of hockey and just making safe choices to the detriment of the offense. And I waited for it. And last night was the first time I saw smart people start to say, haven't seen this since Carlisle was in charge.
That's like the Jacob Marley. Ooh, Babcock. I'm Randy Carlisle. You'll be visited by three ghosts.
Steve Simmons, yes. Damien Cox, and Bruce Arthur.
By the way, my Jacob Marley was just Paul Bearer from the WWE.
It's actually pretty good, though.
Yeah,
I guess that shows how good Paul Bearer's impersonation of Jacob Marley is.
Oh! Okay, wait. And now I think I forgot my point. Ah, damn it. I had another thing. Oh, I've got it, Bob. I've just thought of it off the top of my head, how the NHL can fix this.
Okay.
Because you can't fix it on the
board. NHL or the Leafs?
The NHL. Okay. The NHL.
So we're back to ripping them again?
It's not ripping, because the ultimate way to rip the NHL is this. Who cares? That's the ultimate way to rip.
That's true. You show your anger with apathy. Yeah. That's what hurts the most.
Yeah, there's no apathy here. Here's how you do it. The league office says, hey, guys, coaches, we can't do anything about it with you clogging the neutral zone. We can't call a penalty. It's not going to work. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to watch you, and we're going to chart every one of your games, and we're going to see the amount of time you're doing the classic, you know, clogging the neutral zone. And we're going to note it, and we're going to put, you know, a minutes. And by the way, the teams that do it the most at the end of the year, we're going to take away draft picks. And if you do it, say, like 118 minutes, you're going to lose a third rounder. If you do it 142, and by the way, we're going to show you all the numbers. We're going to be transparent. We're going to show you our work. So if you want to be Cloggy McCloggerton, great. We're going to take away draft picks.
Now, I love the spirit of this, so I'm inclined to. No, I have to do it. I have to be that guy.
It's off the top of my head,
yeah,
Bob.
It's on brand. That's the worst idea I've ever heard.
Okay.
But I'm glad you feel that way. Yeah. And I'm sure in time when you've thought it through a bit more, you're going to take away draft picks based on neutral zone trapping.
Yes. You must put the fear of God in the coaches.
Shouldn't you actually have a rule then that they're breaking?
But the thing is, they always find a way
around
it.
In basketball, you've got zone defense. And for years, you couldn't employ it because they wanted to goose the offense.
Yep. They'll find a way around it. They'll find a way to clog it up. Listen, change the rules. I'm all for that as well.
It's what coaches do. We've talked about this 1,000 times on this pod, and I think anybody who watches hockey with love in their heart, but sleep in their eyes, and the changer in their hand.
I want October NHL throughout the season.
It is the most fun month, isn't it?
Yes.
There's mistakes.
There's people figuring things out, adjustments.
Nobody's gotten yelled at yet, so they're still trying to have fun.
Anyway.
It's but anyway, Leo Komarov, on down, because he is going to get, he's already started to get ripped. He's getting ripped by the smarts, and pretty soon even just the casual fan is going to recognize Komarov's playing 18 minutes a night, and Marner and Nylander can't get on track, and they're getting, like, Nylander's getting stapled to the bench in third periods of games. This makes no sense.
Yes. Nylander, one shot against the Flyers, none against the Penguins. You know, certainly had more last night against Minnesota, but Nylander should have double the shots on goal that that Komarov has. And again, part of that's on him. Part of that is where he is, geography, location, location, location. And you don't want to be in the basement apartment that is the fourth line.
But they've been winning. And they've been winning with scoring balance. And so when you talk about loading up the nuclear options and trying to get all your best players playing together, then you just have the problem of a third and fourth line that's easy to crush.
They've been winning because Anderson has been playing incredible, and they've been getting outshot.
But the offense, with the exception of the last, say, six games, has been pretty good.
It has.
They score a lot of goals. I mean, we are complaining about something that works, by and large.
I know that. And a week ago, I remember being the calm guy on Landsberg in the morning, saying, Michael, nope, not going to complain about Marner and Nylander, not going to do it. But then the wind changed, Bob, and it changed when I sat at the...
I feel like we should just call this the North Wind Edition.
The North
Wind
Edition. There I was, slowly sipping my beer, waiting to see Star Wars, watching that second period. And as I was watching it, I'm like, it suddenly came out, I'm going to complain now.
Do you remember I had to go pick up my daughter? It was about 2 weeks ago, and I was in a bar, and I watched the first period of, it was New Jersey.
Yeah.
New Jersey on the Leafs. Yeah. Exact same experience. And you have to buy something while you're waiting. You can't just sit there like a mook and eat peanuts.
If I'm forced to buy a drink,
fair enough. I suppose. That's right. Because you actually drink. See, I don't drink. So I had to buy two cranberry and sodas, which I did not want.
My
urinary tract is fine.
Bartender loved you. He goes to the back. Yeah. This dipshit over here keeps. I'm going to make an 18-cent tip.
I basically had to spend $15 to watch that after two tips and taxes. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious to see, and I don't think there's an answer to this yet, but let's track this. Mm-hmm. How long till people get madder at Babcock? Because he has been he's golden.
Yeah.
And anything he does, And in fairness, he's a hell of a coach.
Yes, he's earned a lot of that.
And maybe what he's doing is just part of the process where the pendulum has swung too far into the defensive side of things because he's trying to teach his young players, here's how you have to be responsible to be a great NHL player.
As long, someone let me know that, again, this is just Babcock painting the fence. Wax the car. That this, he's just Miyagi-ing the team right now.
No, maybe that's to fine. A certain extent, an NHL coach is always going to be like this. Whenever there's trouble, and whenever you feel your team's being sloppy, you lean on your scrappy, gritty players a little more. Connor Brown, Zach Hyman, Leo Komarov, they're in there and they're scrapping. And we used to rip Randy Carlyle for this all the time. Now let's take all the systems out of it.
Yeah.
Let's take systematic play out of this. Just the fact that an NHL coach would value grit over dynamic but somewhat undependable skill, that's hardly a new thing.
It is. You're right. And I forget, I said Green Bay Russell. I apologize because I was tweeting with him last night. Babcock loves boring. And nothing sticks in my craw, if you've been listening less than that, more than anything else.
I think
and,
we got the gist of it. Yeah. By the way, Marner is 2 goals this year.
I know.
These guys are pretty insulated. Remember they talked about wanting to create a safe place for them to all grow in?
Yep.
It's pretty safe.
Yep.
This is a Canadian market, and you've got a 4th overall draft pick who scored, set the rookie assist record last year for the Leafs, who has 2 goals this year and does not look like the same player. And people have barely said a peep.
It's because he still looks great as the dynamic playmaker, but he isn't scoring, and there's been wasted opportunity.
Shot 12% at even strength last year. 12%.
Yeah.
And this year he's something like 2%.
It's crazy. By the way, they play back-to-back. The Maple Leafs play Detroit tonight. Now, if they lose tonight, and if you want to know about if there's going to be criticism at the coach, it's going to come if they lose tonight against Detroit because they don't play again till Tuesday. So you know what the media and the fans have? They got Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and beyond being distracted by a little bit of Raptors or the Jays doing nothing or Steelers and Patriots, you got a whole lot of time to dissect the game film.
That's a really good point. Idle hands are the devil's workshop.
They are indeed.
So, and one last thing I wanted to point out here.
Yeah.
The good news, the silver lining and all this. Do you remember at the beginning of the year we said we need Nylander to have a kind of a down year so he's more affordable?
Oh, right now, Lamoriello and Brian Pritt. Is it Brian Pridham? Is it
Brandon?
Brandon, thank you. Brandon Pridham are like, I imagine Pridham, like to the public. Ah, man, this sucks so much. I wish Marner was scoring 3 goals a night. Wink, 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 wink.
Remember how telethons used to have that thermometer and you would color in the red to show how far up the meter you were going?
Yeah, exactly.
That, the thermometer is dropping back down.
Yeah.
So he's going to ask for 7. That'll be a fascinating contract negotiation. If this year does not become much better, if it kind of stays here, then you've seen him be great.
Yep.
And you've seen him be okay.
Yeah.
What's that worth?
I just know this. I'd pay a lot of money to be able to watch all the contract negotiations between Marner and Nylander's agent and Matthews, but Marner and Nylander would be more interesting, and the Maple Leafs. Like, I would pay a lot of money just to be able, or you know what, even for a little less money, at least give me the court transcripts. Give me something. I want
because we know how well these negotiations go, right?
That'd be great.
Many good feelings are spawned by arbitration and these kinds of situations.
Yeah.
I do want to throw this out and another thing to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm.
The offense is a holistic system, and we tend to blame the forwards when they struggle and not look at the defensemen. We tend to look at the defensive numbers and blame the defensemen.
Yep.
Look at the offensive numbers and blame the forwards. But the truth is, they work hand in glove. And I wonder to what extent the Leafs' trouble with breakouts this year and the fact that a Jake Gardner is not having a Jake Gardner type year and that Zaitsev hasn't been particularly great. Riley and Hayes have been really good.
Great.
Sure. Yeah. But that's 2 out of 6 defensemen.
Yep. Oh, no,
you
know, you're right.
You got Roman Polak out there. They have not succeeded in breaking the puck out of their zone with the same efficiency and creativity that they did last year. So I wonder to what extent, how long it is till we turn back on the fact that their defense isn't that great. And everything suffers when that's the case.
Yeah. Quick shout out to Morgan Rielly. The best thing I watched with the no volume as I drank my Guinness at the bar was watching Morgan Rielly. That was maybe the best thing I saw.
Any other takeaways, Matt? I got a few, actually. I got a lot to say today. It's because I was sick yesterday, so I actually had time to make notes.
Yep.
I came in with like 6 shows worth of material.
By the way, you want to give a quick shout out to the Twins?
Oh, should we bring that up here? We probably should. Coming into Matt's place is always a trip. It's like walking into a mall at Christmas time because it is the Christmas Chrisus, help me out here, Matt.
Christmiest.
Christmasiest?
Sure, that works.
Place that ever Christmased.
Uh-huh.
Right now, between us, we've got, actually, what do we have here? We've got a Christmas little Christmas tree ornament. We've got cookies on a plate.
That
we've got a poinsettia. I'm barely able to sit at the table because the tree has me crouched over it. So huge.
I think I told you we named it Norm because it's big and fat.
No,
and we're rewatching Cheers.
It is. So that's why you tweeted out. You sent me a text the other day just saying how well Cheers held up.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The point is that if you thought Thanksgiving was a big deal,
yeah,
or Halloween was a big deal around here, Christmas is where they really let it all hang out.
And they're dressed up as Christmas elves as they're going up to Mississauga with this charity where they are giving away gifts and food and Christmas trees to needy families.
Hats, boots.
Yeah.
Full regalia.
The whole thing.
Like, I wouldn't describe those mini skirts, but they were above the knee.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So almost like candy stripers.
Yeah.
Right? Is that what they call people who are helpful in...
In hospitals,
yeah. In hospitals. So like that, but for Christmas.
Yep.
They're candy cane stripers.
Yes.
There you go. You like that one, buddy?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Thank you. So yeah, they're going, and so shout out to Christy and Amy, Hope for Help Charity. Yeah. So they, again, proven once again, they're better than we are.
They're just the best people in the world, and we suck in comparison.
Yeah, we do.
It's not even close. They are Toronto's best Italian sausage.
There you
we
go.
Are just Italian sausage.
Sure, there's a segue, so I'm going to go back to this.
Why do you always, you know, there doesn't have to be a segue.
I know. Bob, we come from the world of radio. Everything's a segue.
Aruga.
You know what's odd? I never even knew this was a thing. And then this is about the Raptors.
Okay.
Are people planning on booing Damari Carroll? Is that like I saw Josh Lewenberg tweeting about it, and a couple Sean Woodley, the Locked On Raptors Report podcast, which is a good one. And I keep hearing these things saying, "People, please don't boo Damari Carroll." And my first thought was, "Is that a thing? Like Damari Carroll?"
It's kind of a thing, I guess.
Because the funny thing is I know people don't like sour grapes, and people think that Damari Carroll threw the Raptors under the bus after he was traded. You know, it wasn't like
he did throw them under the bus.
Yes, he did, but. His throwing under the bus is what we all said. He complained about, you know, you got two great all-stars, two great players. That's how they play. They were playing that way before I came, and they're going to be playing that way long after I leave. They're not changing that for me. He was talking about how this team is way too much ISO ball, and I'm more into a team ball sort of atmosphere.
It did make it look like he was blaming his incredibly substandard performance on the fact that the team let him down.
There was, absolutely, there were sour grapes.
So there was, yeah.
He's a poor messenger. But his message was correct.
It was a bit of the Mikhail Grabowski thing where you wind up leaving town and you just throw a grenade back into the hallway behind you.
Yeah, but...
Look, I think it's pointless to boo him because who the hell is Damari Carroll?
Yeah.
Who is he to us and who is he to the league? He was a pretty good forward with the Atlanta Hawks who got overpaid because they wanted a do-everything kind of guy, a 3-and-D kind of guy. And he didn't turn out to be that for a variety of reasons. He wasn't a great fit.
Yep.
And he was hurt a lot.
Yeah.
And he was $16 million a year.
Yeah. If you want to boo anyone, boo Masai Ujiri. Because Damari Carroll represented the ultimate in buy high. He suddenly had career high stats all across the board.
On a very team-oriented team.
On an incredibly 60-win team-orientated Atlanta Hawks, where I believe everyone but him was voted into the All-Star game. So all he did was stay healthy, was in a perfect situation, and thrived. And you expect him to do something similar to that with the Raptors. So if you're going to boo anyone, boo Masai Ujiri. And he got hurt. And he wasn't a great player. And, like, you know, I'm right and wrong all the time in my predictions. I never thought he was going to be good here. Never thought he was going to be good.
He was the kind of player that they needed, but you're not sure if he was actually going to be that guy taken out of the very protective cocoon that was the Atlanta Hawks. If people boo, I got...
Save your boos!
I got booing Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Just because he seemed so bloody happy to be going to Miami.
Yeah.
I never had a problem that he went there. He signed his second contract with Toronto. He was one of the best players who ever put on a Raptors jersey. And he was a hell of a great guy. But he looked a little happy.
Yeah.
To be up there with Wade and LeBron.
Yes. And we had such we had emotional ties with Bosh. Boo him. Boo Vince. There are people that deserve our booing.
How many Damari Carroll jerseys have you seen at the ACC?
Oh, God. Maybe like...
I wonder if there is one. If there is one, can you tweet us a picture of someone who has a Damari Carroll jersey?
There'll be someone. There's going to be.
I bet there's nobody.
Oh, there's going to be, because Basketball Hipster, they're a proud band, especially in Toronto, where they feel like they're in the vanguard, the underground, always being crushed by hockey coverage. That was my Jiminy Glick.
So you've done Jiminy Glick, yes, and hello. Paul Bearer. Is there a double chin thing happening for you today?
Yes, hello. What is it about that you don't have a mustache? You're not trying to hide anything anymore? Tell me more.
By the way, I should point out, even though you can't see this, and you probably never knew this about me, but for the last 2 years, I've had a mustache.
Yep.
But I just shaved my mustache. And you know who thinks it looks better?
Who?
Nobody.
Really?
I keep asking, how's it look? And people are like, so you shaved it, eh? Yeah, you shaved it.
How's your wife think? What does Sandra?
She doesn't care. She's got so many other things on her plate when it comes to me. This is like so far down the list. But I did it because I didn't want to have happen to me what happened to my dad. Mm-hmm. My dad, he couldn't shave his mustache because he had it too long.
Oh.
And then when you do shave it, you just look weird to everybody. So I figured I better get on this early, because if I keep it another couple of years, I'm going to be a mustache guy till I die.
That's a great point.
See, now I have the choice to grow back if I want, and then I'll be a guy who sometimes has a mustache.
Okay.
My daughter doesn't like it.
Yeah.
She's very clear about this. Dad, what happened to your mustache? I don't like this. But she will get used to it.
First, you know what you do? Find a big glossy photo of you with a mustache, wait 6 months, and then go, okay, which one do you prefer?
Right, because then people can make a good, educated decision. Now, it's recency bias right now, man. Yeah. They're still recoiling from the shock of my face.
So you're trying to pull like a Jim Carrey, which it was always comedy guy, and then no, then he started doing serious movies. Or Tom Hanks, comedy guy, and then, you know, suddenly starts...
Bill Murray did it with The Razor's Edge.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell did it with Stranger Than Fiction.
Yep. By the way, underrated movie.
It is a really underrated movie.
It's a
Maggie Gyllenhaal, very good in that movie.
She was
very good.
So yeah, so Bob doesn't have a mustache.
I don't. We've covered a lot of important topics and some not so important ones.
Though. Yeah. So anyway,
this is peak Macko and Cause.
Yeah. Don't boot DeMario Carroll. Save it.
It's just so stupid.
I don't know if I tweet out if there's a golf clap version of the boo, then do that, and then move on, because he's not worth your emotional time. He doesn't have the same emotional connection as some of the greats that deserve being booed.
Top 5 Star Wars secondary characters coming up, and Matt will give his non-review of Star Wars. You've been so good about this.
Thank you.
We could actually just jump into it here if you want. I still got some J's to talk, but I have to give you an total credit where it's due, Maddie. Mm-hmm. I was convinced that you would betray, kind of like a bad poker player, how you actually felt about the new Star Wars, which you watched last night at 10:15.
10:50, 5:00. I got home. 10:50. And then had a drink afterwards with my buddy to debrief a little bit, because, you know, it's such a big movie. And you
went by yourself, right?
No, actually, in the end, a friend came. Last minute friend came. So, a buddy of mine, Sunday.
And you refused to buy tickets in advance, so you stood in line to get them.
And the thing is, I went to a theater where it wasn't packed.
Why, is it over at the Rainbow?
No, it was Beaches Cinema, not Market Square, the Rainbow Market Square by St. Lawrence Market. No, Beaches Cinema, and it was 10:45. So the theater was only about a third packed.
Now, Cause has not betrayed in any way whether he thinks it's a good movie or a bad movie, because at this early phase, it's not just about plot disclosure. I think that it's a spoiler alert if you tell people if you like it or not.
Yes.
You have to give people at least a week or two, and not, because you can't get that out of your brain once you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
We are so obsessed with reviews in our culture that we live for reviews.
Yeah.
And they completely shade. There's so many options out there. Like, if you were to come in here and say, I didn't like it very much, I'd be crushed.
Yeah.
And then I would go and see it with a cloud over my head.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like when the Gruesomes used to drive around in the Flintstones and they had that little cloud.
The Gruesomes.
That followed their car.
Yep.
That'd be following
me. By the way, anyone under 30, you're going to have to Google Gruesomes plus Flintstones to figure out what Bob said. So
you're so excellent, Matt. Now I'm going to do my Mr. Gruesome impersonation.
That's not bad. And the thing is, I could easily have come in and done this. Bob, you have to see it. Or I could have gone, Bob, see it sometime.
And you got to understand that Matt and I have been discussing this every day, hour on the hour, for about a week now.
Mm-hmm. And then I joked that I was going to tweet out spoilers, or I'd live tweet during the movie.
I'm going to probably see it on Monday or Tuesday. Unfortunately, because of my cold, I wasn't able to do much Christmas shopping the last few days, so now everything gets bumped down. I wanted to see it this weekend, but that's not going to happen.
You're not going to see it till after Christmas.
No, I'll see it before Christmas.
Because
I have access to matinee.
Okay. No, I'm just... Okay, but you also have Christmas shopping to do.
And a lot of it.
Yeah, and you're going to have to carve out 3 hours. because just with previews and everything and stuff.
Yeah, and it's a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah, when you get in and out.
So we've been teasing this idea of a top five Star Wars secondary characters list for weeks now.
Yeah.
Shall we just get into it?
Yeah, and I want to do sort of a mix between some of the newer and some of the older ones, and also pick characters that, I'm not going to be able to properly pronounce. Coming in at number five, these are just like really secondary characters. I mean, these are not even like Greedo, okay? There's no Boba Fett's on this list. Okay, by the way, for anyone who is not a nerd, fast forward 7 minutes.
You are going even lower than Greedo. Greedo's pretty small. He's only in the movie,
episode four
for about a minute.
Yeah, but you have the whole who shot first. Greedo, he grew in status because of the moral story of who shot first.
And by the way, it was Han.
It was Han.
Han shot first. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Get the hell out of George. Coming in at number five, Lando Calrissian's co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon in Return of the Jedi in the Battle of Endor, Nyenyub. And I have a hard time pronouncing his name. But what I love about this character is, A, he looks really crazy and weird, and some describe his face as layered sushi, which I always found funny. And what I liked is his emotional range, because he went from very serious. But yet, as a small child, when things are going their way, when they bought the Death Star, I always remember his moment of joy, because it looked like my moment of joy. And so as a kid in grade three, I loved Nyenyub. So tiny character, but that's my number five. This is how deep I'm going.
This is so deep. I'm going to find it hard to actually comment. Okay. Yeah.
Number four, partially because one of the greatest badass actors of all time. This guy was a spy in the Second World War. He was a swashbuckler. He was a count. I'm talking about Christopher Lee playing Count Dooku. And he got a goofy death. I think it was in Revenge of the Sith. Or Battle of the Clones. I think it was Sith. And he was great with a lightsaber. He was, like, I watched that character, and here's why I really liked him.
And even a goofy name, Matt.
Yeah, Count Dooku. Yes. I was bummed out when he died. Because I'm like, this guy could have been the main villain. With his acting chops. Like, seeing Christopher Lee in this movie, I'm like, damn, what are you doing here, bro? You know, it's like if you're friends with a guy who just retired in the NBA and he joins your pickup team, or, you know, someone just retired in hockey and they're now suddenly in your beer league. It's like, what are you doing here?
It's like Peter Cushing from the first two movies, from episode four. I can't remember the name of the character right now, but he's the officious general that is in bad standing with Darth Vader.
General. I'm thinking of
Leia. I'm blanking on it.
By the way, that guy? Too high up to include in this list.
It is too high up to include in this list, but it's the same kind of thing where you have a classic British actor who's played 1,000 villains who shows up in this movie to play a villain.
Yeah. Number three, Mon Mothma. Now, you might not know that line.
I know this guy.
Many Bothams die to bring us this information. She's in Return of the Jedi. She's got the white gown and
oh wait, no, she's the general who's part of the Rebel Alliance, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no. I thought of something else. I was thinking of Hammerhead, but
no, not Hammerhead.
So you're using the real names. That's what makes this complicated.
Yeah.
You're supposed to use just the well, I guess you can do whatever you want.
Well, I didn't use her real name. Her real name was Caroline Blackenstone or Blackie.
I guess that's true. I never think of these characters by their actual names.
Yeah.
I just think of her as the woman
in Return of the Jedi giving the plans for the Death Star.
Right, the wicked rebel general. Yeah.
And the great thing about that line is in the movies, and Return of the Jedi was sort of the more fun, childish one. But that was a moment of brevity, of gravity. Because it's like, listen, a lot of people died. And rarely do you hear the word, they're dead, in a Star Wars movie. And when she delivered that line, it was chilling. It was like, oh, there are real stakes here. So that's at number three. Number two, Phantom Menace. I was really bummed out when Liam Neeson died. I cannot pronounce his name.
Mm-hmm.
It's Qui-Gon Jinn or Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon, then J-I-N-N. Whatever his name is.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah. The guy who first trained young Obi-Wan Kenobi, Liam Neeson was awesome. And his lightsaber fight scene near the end and just the John Williams score was great. But he was only in one of the movies, and he gets a little bit overshadowed eventually by Ewan McGregor. But Liam Neeson coming in at number two. And finally, number one, got to go with someone a little old school. Got to go with a guy who always got it done, who always had Luke Skywalker's back. I'm talking about Wedge Antilles. He was there on not one but two runs on the Death Star. He was commander of the Rogue Squadron. He's the one who helped keep Luke Skywalker alive by getting a TIE fighter off of his back during the first raid of the Death Star. Got to be Wedge Antilles at number one.
I love your list, Matt. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, it's
nerdy.
It's pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done it that way. I would probably gone the Greedo route.
Yeah.
But I love it, and it really shows that you are a truly passionate fan.
Yeah. So there is my top five obscure Star Wars characters.
See, I wonder if you could go as... See, you would never have, like, BB-8 as one of your, like... secondary characters. See, I think you went for tertiary or, you know, even lower down the really, really minutia.
Well, the thing is, BB-8's great. I preferred the robot from Rogue One.
Yeah, that robot's terrific.
Yeah. So,
but my point is, they're just sort of like, they're spice.
Yeah.
How are the Porgs, by the way?
What's that?
The Porgs. Don't answer.
No, I'm not going to answer. No. I'm not going to answer. See, you want spoilers. I don't want to give you any.
No.
I feel we need some hardcore sport moment here as a palate cleanse to just...
All right, let's talk about the Jays then. Sure. I want to talk about Mark Shapiro on the fan the other day.
Yeah.
And I want to read the quote and then we can discuss.
I don't even know the quote. I'm already laughing at it, but it's horrible.
All right. And I'm going to say it in a monotone way because he's a pretty non-dramatic speaker. I've said it all along. If we were just running our team without fans and it was an intellectual exercise, we probably would have hit reset over a year ago. I'm not denying where we are and what the strategic alternatives are, but the reality is that a very, very, very high price was paid to put a team on the field that our fans responded to in just an incredible way across the entire country. Mark Shapiro, president of the Blue Jays.
So, if I may translate... it's all Alex Anthopoulos' fault that we lost last year.
This is a total shot at Alex Anthopoulos.
And it's why we're going to lose again this year. And by the way, Anthopoulos went for it. And when you go for it, there are repercussions. He's not wrong.
They were within a game of the World Series twice.
Yes, exactly. So, I get it. And thought that this is the price you pay.
And if Brett Cecil doesn't get hurt, maybe they make it because they had to work so hard to try and get around not having a dependable lefty that can get a key out in that series. So... I looked at this
believe
and one.
You.
So here's what my real takeaway was.
Well, the real takeaway, of course, is being governed by money, economics, and the fans.
See, I don't think that's it. I think there's a bit of personality thing here, too. He comes from Cleveland, where he was distinguished as a very intelligent guy, great with building ops, and also made a lot out of a little. He didn't have a huge payroll or a huge fan base to work with, but...
So he should be used to working with Rodgers then.
No, Rodgers is not a small man. Rodgers could spend more, but Rodgers doesn't spend nothing.
Now, they were fifth last year.
And they also have over 3 million fans coming through the turnstiles to watch a mediocre team, or actually a bad year on a pretty good team. But regardless, a 76-win team.
Yeah.
So here's what I was thinking. Mark Shapiro is like an indie director who made his bones making small little movies that people really liked and admired, and now he's got a blockbuster on his hands, and it's a completely different animal. That he's got to direct this the way he's doing it if someone handed him the keys to Thor Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants to make the little sci-fi movie that got him the gig. This, to me, speaks more about Mark Shapiro. There's all different kinds of decisions you got to make as a baseball executive. And running Cleveland, he obviously made really great decisions. But you don't have to make this kind of decision, the kind you have to make with Toronto. How hard do I fight against New York and Boston because they have more resources? How hard do I try to keep satisfied the 3 million fans who are going to come through the turnstiles with a team that can be competitive now? You don't have to worry about that when you're just saying, how do I get my hands on Corey Kluber in our system? Now, of course, that's always going to be part of it for the Jays too. But running a club like the Jays is a different animal. And to me, in this clip, in this quote, he sounded... psychologically, like his character wasn't well suited to try and run a big market team, where part of it is not just how do I achieve excellence, but how do I balance all those other market factors. Alex Anthopoulos got it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Paul Beeston always understood it. I think J.P. Ricciardi tried, but made bad baseball decisions.
Yep. But also, Ricciardi was also hamstrung with having a budget that would be like 17th.
100%.
Like 20th to 17th.
He was brought into Moneyball.
Yeah.
But even in his personality, I think his personality was big enough to accommodate the city. I looked at this and I just saw a guy who was second tier who was trying to work on a first tier plane.
Yeah, no, the indie director analogy is a good one. I wish he would act like an indie director here. because he's trying to act somewhere in the middle. You know what he's like acting like? It's like, I don't get the full Blockbuster money, but I got some of it, so I'll spend it on one big star, and then I won't spend it on the script. You either go one of two ways. You either go all in, or you have to blow it up. But the one thing you said...
Is that true, though? I feel like that's what people are telling us. But I know, what ownership blows up a team that has a young Aaron Sanchez, mm-hmm. Marcus Stroman,
yep.
Estrada,
yep.
and Happ, Asuna in the pen, Josh Donaldson at third. They tried to get Edwin Encarnacion and botched it, but you have potentially a healthy Devin Travis coming back for a whole season, and experts love him, and we're excited to see what he could do if healthy. Who looks at that and says, yeah, we're screwed. Let's blow it up.
We did this last week because we're about to go down that hole. We're about to go the exact same hole. And the thing is, you brought up a good point about why you don't blow up the Blue Jays, and you're not alone there. And that's why I will not yell and scream at you about, though I'm more in the blow it up. But I will, I'll try to shift the conversation a little bit, but still with the Blue Jays and that quote. I get nervous when ownership seriously considers average attendance and uses that as a factor in determining the team's future goals. And whether it's rebuild on the fly, blow it up, go all in. That's what makes me nervous about that quote. It's almost like I want the general manager and the owners never to know what the attendance is, which, of course, is impossible.
Which is how he described it, if it was just an intellectual exercise.
But it's treat not, it as an intellectual exercise.
You can't do that.
I know.
And the idea of being a president is that you've got the business savvy and the business maturity to go along with the baseball side of things. That's what a president does. You mm-hmm. are the go-between the baseball people and the money people.
Yeah.
And so when you sit there and say, I wish it was an intellectual exercise so we could just do what we wanted, well then, you know, go to ESPN.com, start a fantasy team, and try to win. You know, go to DraftKings or something. Just, you know,
yep.
play sports online. But this is about balancing business and baseball.
It is. You know what, another thing that bothered me?
Hmm.
If this was the NHL, we would never say, you know, Toronto can't compete with the Rangers and the Bruins. This is baseball. Nope. I don't have the resources that the Red Sox and Yankees have. And right now the farm team is nowhere near what it needs to be. And that's because the Jays, they did go for it. And Shapiro, again, they're blamed Anthopoulos. But it just goes to the mindset that we're all ingrained in. Yep, can't fight City Hall. And in this case, City Hall is the very small town of Boston and the large city of New York. And that always bums me out. When they're not owned by a mom and pop organization, you know, again, treading down. So just I'm going down an old path about how Roger stinks. Except for now, Rogers, by the way, I'll save it. Any final thoughts on the Blue Jays?
Nope. Just the idea of get it out of your head, Mark Shapiro. This is not an intellectual exercise. It's the real world.
Yeah, it's the real. You got to start. Yeah. No, you're right. It's a good point.
Everybody on paper has an idea that works.
Mm-hmm. Rogers in the CFL game now.
I know. I was going to bring this up. They somehow. Why did they do it?
You had Tannenbaum
and Bell.
Yeah, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment have purchased the Toronto Argonauts, which means that Rogers owns part of the Argonauts. Sportsnet, the Fan 590, now have some, albeit tiny, but vested, you know, interest in the CFL.
That's hilarious. It'll be interesting to see how they actually promote through their news coverage.
Yeah.
The CFL, while they've got their Jays running up against TSN.
Yes.
CFL coverage.
How I just want to see this, like, and again, this is not because, you know, we come from the TSN side of things for so long. This is just more just an interesting thing, and this is geeky media, but how many times will we see a billboard on Sports Central where it's saying, "And make sure the Argos game is coming up." Like, you know, and I get why any news organization, I guess I don't really, because you're supposed to be there to serve the fan. Actually, I don't like it at all. I take that all back. But when the news, when the sports media entity kind of buries a league or a team because they don't have any broadcast rights and their opponent does.
And more obviously, when you promote the things that you have, like TSN's coverage of the World Juniors will be outrageously big as compared to Sportsnet's.
Yes. Yeah, they all do it. Everyone is guilty of it.
But TSN is in the football game, so their football coverage gets beefed up.
Yes.
And of course, their Jays coverage. You always see this. It's always, I love it in the summer when the Jays aren't the first story on TSN.ca.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, Ottawa Red Black story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great. And by the way, just as a disclaimer, there is lots of very smart, passionate CFL, Canadian college football fans at Sportsnet. It's not about them, and it's not about the personalities, nor do I think it's any of the personalities not talking to CFL because they've been told from their bosses. I've never believed that. It's never happened with us at Bell or TSN. This is more just, I always find it interesting from the people at the top, you know, sort of guiding the editorial decision.
See, this is why we need net neutrality, Matt. Because if you leave these things up to corporations, decisions will be made in their own best interest, and you can't even blame them for that. Mm-hmm. Would you make a decision in your best interest?
Yes.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. My best interest was one of those Christmas cookies. I dipped it in my tea because I didn't put sugar in my tea, so I figured, I could put a cookie in there. By the way, my favorite tweet about net neutrality was, you know, there's all these doomsday things going on. It's going to cost you thousands of dollars to Google and calm down. Let's wait and see what happens. I would have preferred net neutrality, by the way, just on the front end. But someone's like, yeah, if you do a Bing search, they'll still pay you just to use Bing. So I felt it was like Google will cost you 99 cents per search. Bing, they'll pay you $2.99 for every search just if you would actually use their product. I found that one kind of funny.
So do you want to get to another sports takeaway or do you want to do dot, dot, dot here?
Let's do dot, dot, dot. We only got about 8-9 minutes.
Okay, well, this is perfect for
it. Dot, dot, dot is the podcast award-winning segment. It's sweeping the nation, Bob. Everyone loves dot, dot, dot.
All right, so I've got three here.
Yep.
And how do you feel about me swearing? And it's an F-bomb.
I don't know how to get out beeps. I don't know how to put beeps in. That's above my pay grade.
You've sworn on the podcast before.
Once.
A couple times, actually.
No, once.
Sometimes I think you don't notice.
No, once, and it was today.
Was it today?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice. No, because you did it in the last one, too. And I don't think you notice. So you do swear sometimes. Shouldn't we put just one of those little E's next to the podcast that indicates explicit language?
No, because then you might get fewer listeners. You want to have it open to everyone.
Are you kidding? Who are we going to go from 8 to 7?
Well, let me tell you, Bob, I want to... You know, we're looking after the 7 to 12 year old demographic. You're, you know, eventually your daughter's demographic. All right, get all right. The dot dot dot. And
all right, I'll self censor.
Yeah.
To make you happy, Matt.
Yeah, do it like South Park. The bleeps are funny.
All right. What is the best game to binge on Xmas break? NBA 2K. I'm looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever someone says an old home has character,
wait, you need to do dot dot dot. You got to do
dot dot dot.
Yeah.
Whenever someone says an old home has character, you can be pretty damn sure it's drafty as bleep in the winter.
Yes.
Happy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we forgot to mention Jack Morris going to the Hall the other day. So here's a take. Jack Morris is the Grant Fuhrer of pitchers. Which one of those do you want to discuss?
So Jack. Absolutely. He's absolutely the Grant Fuhrer of pitchers. I'm glad he's in the Hall of Fame. He was relevant. He pitched big games. And you know what? I'm going to go full eye test and gut and emotion. Because he was fantastic.
What I loved about Jack Morris, and we saw this when he was with the Jays, is that if he would give up 4 runs, but only if the offense had 5. He would just fit whatever space you gave him. Was he a shutdown expert? Was he Sandy Koufax or Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer? Nope. He was just a workhorse who, for whatever reason, had an appetite for big games. But kind of like Grant Fuhrer, he would like make mistakes and give you problems,
yeah,
but never when it was a bad time to do it. Mm-hmm. Grant Fuhrer could be counted on in a close game to win the game. Jack Morris could be counted to pitch a great 7th and 8th inning if you were up by 1, and that just happened to be 5-4.
The Hall of Fame is a museum, and it feels to me that the story of baseball needs to have Jack Morris in it. We'll never have the stats to fully look at what does it mean for a team when you have that pitcher that'll go extra innings. Even when he doesn't have it, and he's going to be giving up a bunch of runs when he's out there pitching in the 8th because the bullpen, you know, needs a bit of a break.
And when he was with the Twins, maybe the greatest World Series victory in a game 7 ever. Going into the 10th inning, winning 1-0.
It is, because the thing is, that's a higher degree of difficulty. Hey, he pitched 10 innings in his 6-5 game. All right. But he did in a 1-0 game where the stakes are so much higher. And, I mean, that's the single greatest game I've seen. That's in terms of just a pitcher in one game with all the stakes. 100%. Yeah, I'm glad he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure there's a lot of numbers and analytics that says he shouldn't. In this case, bleep it. I'm glad he's in.
I'm with you on this one, too. And Alan Trammell, a bit of a surprise. I don't know if you're old enough. I'm 5 years older than you, so I remember Alan Trammell playing like that 1983 Tigers team.
Oof.
That just killed the Jays. The Jays were an emerging power in the AL East, but you could just never get over those Tigers. Do you remember how great that team was? Willie Hernandez and Sweet Lou Whitaker.
I was 7 and 8 at the time, so I didn't know the players, but I always knew this. It was more about emotion. Detroit made me sad and scared. Like as a kid, I'm like, oh, here's that Detroit thing that's ruining my childhood sports happy. That's right. When I think of the Tigers.
Accurate way to look at it because they ruined your sports happy for sure. Yeah. So how much time do we have left? Because I have a quick football question for you.
We got 4 minutes.
All right. So just quickly, New England and Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God. This is going to be a great game.
Who you got?
I'm going to go New England. They've lost, I think they've lost two in a row. They lost to Miami and...
I think they just lost one.
Yeah. Gronk's back.
That's the key. Gronk is back and Shazier is out.
Yeah, Gronk's back, Shazier's out. Also, people don't know this. Miami, for whatever reason, going to Miami, New England's always had so much trouble going there. Like in 2004, when they had some like 13-game winning streak, they lost in Miami. Actually, I think Wes Welker killed them as well when he was a Dolphin then.
If I remember correctly, actually, Miami, the ones who broke up the Chicago Bears' perfect season, too.
Yes, they did. Dan Marino, Monday night game.
Miami.
Yep.
Near oranges.
Yeah. And why a helmet on a Dolphin? I think part of it's just going to New England. They're always bad there. So, and they gave up, Pittsburgh gave up a lot of points and yards to the Baltimore Ravens. Now you got New England with Gronk back. So I think New England wins.
My brain says New England, but I've been saying that the Steelers are going to win the AFC all year. Mm-hmm. And so this is either where I'm proven right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, anybody's guess.
Yeah.
And the playoffs will be up for grabs. All I know is this. That the last couple of weeks, the NFL, after a pretty dull season, mm-hmm. is starting to get pretty interesting.
Yep.
It is picking up. And it always does at this time of year. But and Aaron Rodgers looks like he's coming back. The NFL can only be down for so long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I know it's a cottage industry to rip on the NFL. And we should. There's a lot of things that, you know, are always going to be very distressing. But you got some good Saturday. You got a great Saturday game in the Chargers, who are now alive because the Chiefs keep losing. The Chargers and the Chiefs are 7-6. But, yeah, I'll just say this. Poor Monday Night Football. Poor ESPN and ABC. They paid billions of dollars. And you didn't make Pittsburgh, New England the Monday nighter. We knew you could have told before the season begun. That's a great game. A great game. And you know what the Monday nighter is, Bob? Atlanta at Tampa. Tampa didn't go to the playoffs last year.
But in fairness, though, people thought that Tampa was going to be a better team this year. And that Atlanta was a disastrous collapse in the Super Bowl away from being the champions. So, and they're divisional.
Non-playoff teams making Monday Night Football, that never happened in the mid-90s.
It always cracks me up, and I feel bad for the programmers because you do never know, to your point.
Yeah.
But I'm sure in a different universe, that's a really important game.
Yeah. The Sunday Nighter, Dallas-Oakland, two playoff teams last year. You know, that's a great Sunday Nighter. And then the Monday Nighter, Atlanta at Tampa. I don't know why. Is Goodell still angry that Bill Simmons was employed there for so long? Those Monday night games stink.
That's why New England is like buying stock in Google. Mm. You know it's always going to be okay.
Yeah.
From year to year, it's going to be fine.
Yep, absolutely.
So I think we're pretty much done. I think that Monday's pod is going to be the last one of 2017.
It might be, the last live one. We'll see about doing some evergreen, some top five movie things. Oh, by the way, we're out of time. Do it on Monday. Buffalo Phil got you a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of our listeners who always provides a lot of great content. He sent it over here and we just got like wrapped up into everything. And like, cause his gift to you is like still under my Christmas tree. But we'll do an update, on Monday, about what the gift is,
which is just such a lovely gesture. So thank you. I didn't want to bring it up.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to bring it up until I opened it up and then I could.
Yeah. But then I was thinking, oh, we could open up live on air, but then now we're out of time.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
We'll do it
on Monday.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's going to be the last live pod. Well,
yeah.
Live, you know.
Yeah.
None of them are really live.
Yeah.
Live to laptop.
There you go. Absolutely. All right. Yeah.
All right, Maddie, we're wrapping up. So shall we get it going?
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.